Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, our Thursday night edition. One night a week, we bring the program, host the program in the evenings. And the reason we do that, of course, because James Corbett is going to be our guest for the second and third segments of the program. And Mr. Corbett is in Japan. It's just morning time where he is. And we can't... we can't interview him on the date at our regular afternoon times because he's asleep. You know, it's in the middle of his night or someplace along that line. I'm not sure, but it's a, he can't be there. So we have to make accommodations, and we're here. We'll talk to Mr. Corbett in about 20 minutes. He should be on in about 20 minutes. In the meantime, let's talk about the markets. Today's market, gold was up $3.60 to $1,186.10 an ounce. Silver was up 11 cents to $16.22 an ounce. Platinum was up a buck, 1,084. Palladium was down 10 to 726. Take a look at the paper markets. Dow Jones was up 31 points to 17,936. NASDAQ was down a little over 9 points to 5,065. New York Stock Exchange was up 16 to 11,014. U.S. dollar index was it fell during the day to 94.28, and that's interesting to me. We've had a peak near 100 for the U.S. dollar index a couple of months ago after a year of the U.S. dollar index rising from about 80 to about 100. Translates into a 25% rise in a year's time. It's since, now it's fallen back down to 90, it's in the 94.28 earlier today. We have to wonder, is the U.S. dollar index going back down to 80? That's where it was 15 months ago or thereabouts. Are we going to lose what had been gained over the past year? How far down is the U.S. dollar index going to go? And this is a big question because it's because the U.S. dollar index is evidence of whether or not the dollar is suffering inflation on the international market or if it's deflating and growing more valuable. I have no doubt that the government wants inflation. Right. They may have ulterior motives where they play with deflation for a while, but deflation is just ruinous to government, and particularly overly indebted government, because it means that you have to pay off your bills with more expensive dollars. If we have deflation and a dollar bill that would have bought a dollar's worth of product today, a year from now, that same dollar bill might buy $1.25 worth of product. Still a dollar bill, but it's got 25% more value. And as a result of that, the debtors who owe $1,000, right, they signed up, they borrowed $1,000, they agreed to pay back $1,000, but by the time the debt comes due, they're actually paying back the equivalent of $1,250. Right? Not $1,000, they're paying back $1,250. And that additional cost, even though it's invisible and it doesn't show up on the books, they borrowed $1,000, they pay back $1,000, but the purchasing power is higher. And that invisible increase tends to push debtors into bankruptcy. The government of the United States, of course, is the biggest debtor in the world. It can't withstand deflation for long, and it's if at all. And it's part of the reason why we have seen the dollar. You hear our ads, and you do the research, you'll understand it yourself, verify it for yourself, that the dollar has lost about 95% of its value since 1971, purchasing power. That's inflation. That's persistent inflation over a period of, what, 44 years, thereabouts? Dollar has lost 95%. Why? How could that happen? It happens because the government wants it to happen. The government wants inflation because the government, being the world's biggest debtor, wants to repay its debts with cheaper dollars. They want inflation so when they borrow $1,000, when they pay the money back, they're only paying back maybe $900 in purchasing power. Again, they borrow $1,000, they give $1,000 back, but the value of the dollar when they borrowed it and the value of the dollar when they repaid it are two different things. And as long as there's inflation, the value of the dollar used to repay the debt is less than the value of the dollar that was borrowed in the first place. And the net result is that the debtors are empowered. They're enriched. Inflation is great for debtors. Right? Deflation is terrible for debtors. Ruinous. Bankrupt them. And the government, being the biggest debtor in the world, they've got to have inflation. So I have been much surprised, or I was much surprised, when the U.S. dollar index rose from 80 to nearly 100, 12 months, starting about 15 months ago and over a 12-month period, gained 25% in terms of purchasing power. I was much surprised that's deflation, but now we're going back down again. And it appears to me, although it's too early to say for sure, it appears to me that people with common sense, even if they are corrupt and prone to defrauding the people, the public, the creditors, perhaps are trying to inflate the dollar and having success, at least on the international level. And why do I say international level? And that's because the U.S. dollar index is a teeter-totter, essentially. We've talked about this in the past, where we've got the dollar on one end of the teeter-totter, and we have a basket of six currencies on the other end of the teeter-totter. They're international currencies, the yen, the pound, the euro. Oh, I don't remember what else is in there, but the Swiss franc, Canadian dollar, maybe the Aussie, maybe the Australian dollar, I don't recall clearly. But the point is, the U.S. dollar index measures inflation, deflation in the dollar on the international market. It's not really an accurate indicator of whether we're having inflation or deflation within the nation. Domestically, we could be having significant inflation. At the same time, the U.S. dollar index was telling us it was suffering deflation, because they're two different contexts. We have inflation or deflation within the United States, right? And that's not measured That's not measured by the U.S. dollar index, at least not directly. U.S. dollar index, how does the dollar relate to six foreign currencies? And that is an international measurement. Crude oil is down 12 cents to $59.80 a barrel. Crude's been hanging around 60 bucks a barrel for the last several weeks. The market's more or less flat today. Nothing major happened. But that dollar index is where I'm going to, you know, keep my eye open on that to see what happens. Because one other side to that is this. As difficult as it is, if the dollar is losing value on the U.S. dollar index, that means that the dollar is losing value in relationship to half a dozen other fiat currencies. When a currency loses value, a fiat currency, what that really means is the currency is losing public confidence. Not dramatically, but a little bit. People look and they say, I got to raise prices, you know. And it's something people do on kind of an intuitive basis, a subjective basis. They don't say, gee, I need to raise my prices because I don't have as much confidence in the dollar as I used to. But that's what it amounts to. And when we see maximum loss of confidence in the U.S. dollar, for example, or a better example would be the Zimbabwean dollar, which most of you know went through a period of hyperinflation a few years ago and finally just expired. It was the rate of hyperinflation was, according to some reports, if I recall correctly, billions of percent per year. I mean, the Zimbabwean dollar, it was as if you got it, you sold something, you got a trillion Zimbabwean dollars, and it was as if those dollars were set on fire when they got into your hands. And you could see them burning right there while they were becoming less and less valuable. It was as if they were already on fire, and you had to go out there and buy something, anything, it didn't matter. You had to turn that paper, that hyperinflating paper, had to be turned into something tangible. It could be a baby, a baby's high chair. Maybe it's a car, maybe it's a tire, maybe, who knows, roofing materials, anything, but something tangible. It was, the value was falling exponentially because the people had lost confidence in the Zimbabwean dollar. That's what hyperinflation, regular inflation. We're losing a little bit of confidence. We don't trust it as much as we used to. It's not a big thing. I don't trust it. I don't trust the dollar quite as much as I used to. Hyperinflation, there's no question. We are losing confidence. And we have no confidence that the dollar that we have in our hand today will be worth 50 cents tomorrow. And therefore, we have to sell it, get rid of it right now. Find somebody, buy something. It doesn't matter what it is. A box of rocks. It doesn't get something that's tangible because it may hold its value until, you know, Friday or Saturday or next week. So what we see with the U.S. dollar index in the last couple of months, as it's fallen from nearly 100 down to 94, we see evidence that the dollar is inflating internationally. That's the implication. And if that's true, it's evidence that confidence in the dollar is waning. It's not being destroyed as if by an explosion, but it's, you know, we're less, little less confidence, little less, little less, little less. When we finally run out of confidence, the dollar will die. The only thing that really supports any fiat currency is the public's confidence, their belief that, this is a fiat dollar. We can use this. This not only has value today, it will continue to have value over the course of the next days and weeks and months and even years. And even if I hold on to it, I can take this dollar, I can stick it under my bed, And by the time I might not spend it for a year, by the time I get around to it, it'll still have basically as much value as it had today. It might only be worth 98 cents compared to what it's worth today. May only have, if there's 2% inflation, maybe it's only worth 98 cents. But I have confidence I can stick that dollar under the mattress and get most of my purchasing power back if I pull it out a year from now or even 2 years from now. But as I lose confidence in that dollar, I start thinking, you know, I used to keep those dollars under my mattress, but now, God, I can't do it. Because the dollar is losing value so fast, it's only going to be worth 80 cents 6 months from now. I can't save those paper dollars. I've got to spend them while I have the maximum opportunity to capture the maximum amount of value in those dollars. That's what inflation is about. That's why when inflation really starts, we go out and we buy some things, sometimes artwork, gold, silver, of course. We buy things that we believe will hold their value while the currency is inflating and becoming less valuable. So, for the last couple of months, dollars becoming less valuable on the international market. We'll watch and see how much impact that's going to have on the domestic, on the value of the domestic dollar. We'll watch to see, will we continue to see evidence of dollar deflation domestically, or will we start seeing more dollar inflation? Odds are we'll see more dollar inflation. If we're getting inflation on the international market, we should see it here, and we already are, because you're seeing the price of gasoline going up. We're in places, we're pleased to see the price of gasoline dropping down the neighborhood at $2. when the dollar was deflating and prices were dropping, people said, yay! And now the people look and say, oh, shucks. We were almost at $2 gasoline, and now we're back up to $2.60, $2.70, $2.75. And it's not that the price is so bad, but we look at it and we see the prices going up. And it tells us that the value of the dollar is going down. And it's evidence that our dollar is, for the moment, inflating, which is evidence that the people are, for the moment, losing confidence in the dollar. And given that the dollar is not backed by gold or silver, right, it has no tangible backing, the only thing that holds it up is public confidence. And if anything happens to strip us of that confidence, then the dollar dies. The whole idea behind the dollar is I can accept one of these worthless, you can look at it, you can see it's just a worthless piece of paper. It doesn't take any brains to see that $100 bill, it's just a piece of paper. The only reason it works is because I can take a $100 bill and receive a $100 bill from one person as payment for something, and I can turn around and I can hand it to one of you, and you'll say, oh yeah, I'll take that $100 bill. I'll give you $100 worth of purchasing power for it. As long as I have confidence, that you have confidence, that someone else, because you're going to take that bill and pass it off to somebody else, as long as I have confidence that you'll take the bill and you have confidence the next guy will take the bill and he has confidence that an even greater fool will be found and he will take that $100 bill, the system holds together. But if we lose confidence in our worthless, our intrinsically worthless paper currency and digital currency, then the whole system may explode, and that's what people are concerned about right now. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements, and when we get back, barring the unforeseen, James Corbett from the Corbett Report will be joining us. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, CORBETTREPORT.com. Corbett, two T's, report.com. James writes, publishes, does podcasts from Japan, been living there since, I believe, 2004. Started the Corbett Report in 2007. And you find James is getting traction. We find him referenced in other documents and other people's publications, and he's been recognized as a source of interesting and intelligent information. And we talked about this, I think it was last week, maybe the week before. But it is amazing that one man, really, in this internet age, you can actually achieve things almost all by yourself. People will find you if you have talent and something to say. So, hello, James. How are you doing?
I am doing well. It is amazing that we can do this, what we're doing right now, talking halfway around the world instantaneously through the internet. And it is interesting, I think, how the technology to enable this arises at just the very time where it seems to be most needed. There is so much groundbreaking stuff going on right now that is not getting widely reported on anywhere else that I think, what we're doing right here is very needed, especially this week. There's been some incredible stories coming through the news.
I agree with you. And let's see if we, I don't know which stories you necessarily think are incredible, but for me, the story of the Texas gold bullion depository strikes me as one of the most important stories I've ever had a chance to report on. Now, do you agree with that? Is that on your list, or you have a different list?
Actually, I have a different list, but I'd be interested to hear your take on the gold bullion story.
Well, the whole idea, I'm in the process of reading the law, and I believe it's about 8,000 words, and I've gone through maybe 2,000. So I've got a ways to go before I get through the law. But last Friday, Governor Abbott here in Texas, he signed off on a law that would establish a gold bullion depository for Texas gold. And it'll be a place not only where the government can park its gold, and they claim they're going to withdraw $1 billion worth of gold from New York, and perhaps the Fed or one of the other bullion banks in New York are going to pull that billion back to Texas. They're going to make proviso for people like myself to open gold accounts in that bank that I can use to write checks, for example, and pay my bills off that gold account. The law specifically says that the gold may not be seized by legislative act, which means the state legislature won't be able to grab it. And people who've written articles prior to this, they say that the feds will be resisted. You come down here, feds, you come down and try to get our gold. You're going to have a problem. We're not going to just roll over. And this is in conjunction. The governor has ordered the Texas militia, the Texas militia, for lack of a better term, to keep an eye on the people from the federal government who are engaged in Jade Helm. All right? Now, this is the sort of thing that's pushing us in a direction where we might have a gold and silver-based currency, again, or at least the use of gold and silver, readily available for the people of Texas if they care to partake, and not so long from now. I regard this as an enormous... I mean, I've been advocating that we go back to gold and silver for I don't know, probably 2 decades. But I didn't exactly think it was going to happen, at least not until the whole thing blew up. And in the aftermath of a national collapse, some of we might get gold and silver. But now it looks, oh my gosh, Texas is going to do it. And I live in Texas, for what it's worth. I'm pleased. I'm proud. This strikes me. And it's the sort of thing where Austin, they will hold gold for other people in foreign countries, all right, other entities. And I'm thinking to myself, where would you like to store your gold? In Hong Kong, Singapore, Canada, Switzerland, or Texas? And a lot of people are going to say Texas. And you build this depository in Austin, and then I'm going to guess that it will spawn a bunch of businesses just on the outskirts of this depository that are wheeling and dealing. In gold. We might see, it's not inconceivable. I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but it's not inconceivable that we might be able to give the Shanghai Gold Exchange a run for their money. Now, do I predict that? No. But not impossible. Texas is a funny place. Strange things can happen. I mean, Texas is as strange as China. So in any case, that's basically the story of the Texas Gold Depository, as I understand it right now. And it's something. It's important. And it's important because there's rumors. John F. Kennedy, he proposed to get rid of Federal Reserve notes shortly before he was assassinated, and some people believe that was the real reason for his assassination. He was tinkering with the money system. Saddam Hussein started selling Iraqi crude for euros rather than fiat dollars. And Iraq was invaded, ruined, destroyed, and Saddam Hussein was hanged by the neck until dead. Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, wealthiest country in Africa, proposed to create a pan-African gold currency, and shortly thereafter, Libya was invaded, destroyed, and Gaddafi was killed. Now we have people in the United States who either haven't read their history or don't put much stock in the interpretation I've just suggested, or they're willing to run this risk and say, look, we're going to have gold and silver back here in Texas, and we're ready to fight. And it makes me smile. So does that ring your bell at all?
It does. I certainly wouldn't deny this is an important story, especially for what it could portend, not necessarily what it has already shown us. But absolutely. First, a matter of correction. If you're referring to the Executive Order 11110 that JFK signed on June 4th, 1963, about the basically the theory is that he signed this executive order that gave the authority to strip the Federal Reserve of its power to loan money to the United States federal government at interest, and that it was basically about issuing silver certificates or silver money again. That is, as far as I'm concerned, it's a myth, and it's been very well debunked.
I don't know that he ever said he was going to issue silver certificates again, but it was my understanding that he just said we will print the money ourselves and spend it in circulation rather than borrow it from the Federal Reserve and then loan it in
circulation. Well, the operative quotation that is usually taken from that executive order is it gave the Treasury Department the explicit authority to, quote, issue silver certificates against any silver bullion, silver, or standard silver dollars in the Treasury, end quote. So that's where this idea comes from. But there's an excellent page up on Freedom Force International, which is the website of G. Edward Griffin, who wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island and one of the Federal Reserve's main critics, who points out the various flaws in that argument. And in fact, this was just part of something that was already ongoing before JFK, that there was these regular issues of silver certificates. And what JFK actually did with that executive order was give the
head of... Well, still had silver certificates that were redeemable until 1968. They were still silver certificates when John F. Kennedy.
Because the last issue of those silver certificates took place under LBJ, and it was eradicated as a result of Executive Order 11110, which gave the head of the Treasury Department the ultimate final authority to end that practice, which had been going on regular issues since before that time. So what JFK did was not actually basically say he was going to print money for the benefit of the people or anything of that sort. What he actually did was end that practice of silver certificate issue. And so it's the exact opposite of what people try to claim about that. So I will, at any rate, I'll put up on my website when I post this this conversation, I'll post a link to that JFK myth section of G. Edward Griffin's website so people can read about it. He goes into great detail. But the point of the Texas Gold Bullion Depository is extremely, I think, important for what it could be. And my questions with stories like this are always, why this and why now? And it's extremely interesting to think. I mean, think about the Texas secession movement, which comes and goes and we hear about it, and it's more or less political wrangling and talk for the most part. But if you were actually seriously thinking about seceding, this would really be one of those first steps that you really would take. I mean, this is something that would at least...
having your own currency system, your own monetary system.
Exactly right. Exactly. You know,
One of the things you may not know is that there are three grids, electrical grids in the United States. And I don't know if you're familiar with this or not. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Maybe not.
There's an electrical grid east of the Mississippi, and there's another electrical grid west of the Mississippi, and there's a third grid that's Texas. Texas has its own independent electrical grid. Now, make of that, I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is, but I guarantee it's one of the things where people sit back and say, it's interesting information in light of Texas secession talk from time to time, and now our own gold depository and our own electrical grid.
Right.
Very
real parts of the infrastructure that would be needed to make that even a viable political threat. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's going to happen anytime in the near future or even anytime at all, but it does make that threat at least a little more realistic. And I think the other side of this is that when we look at the idea of this gold depository, I think you're right. I mean, it is important that to have something like that for American citizens in the United States. It is important to have that kind of resource so they don't have to, you know, store gold in Singapore or what have you. But when you say, I mean, Singapore, Canada, the United States, or Switzerland, or whatever, I mean, I don't think it's an or situation. I think it's an and situation. I think the people who can afford to do so and are able to do so should be storing gold and other forms of wealth offshore as well, in the event of the collapse that would make that actually really important. Because one can imagine a collapse scenario in the United States in which even the Texas Gold Depository would be very much in jeopardy, and you're going to want to try to protect that by diversifying not just what you store, but where you store it.
I agree with that, but you know, people talk about storing their gold overseas in foreign countries, because in case the United States government declares they want to seize our gold. From my perspective, if the United States government starts seizing privately owned gold within the United States, I'm not going to be the least bit surprised if other countries on the outside say, well, if they can do it, we can do it too. I don't see much reason to believe that gold is any more secure in a foreign country than it is within the United States. But at least, given that I live down here and I feel like I'm not born Texan, but I've been here for 35 years, we might fight for this. You know, your gold might be safe just because we've got a depositor. They just might say, come and try to take it. Try to take our guns. Try to take our gold. Let's see how much you can get. Texas is an unusual place, so who knows? You know, half of the world is real, and half of the world is something like a myth, a fantasy, an illusion. And trying to figure out which is not, you know, it's full-time job trying to discern between the truth and the illusions. And we'll find out, well, of course, next year or so, we'll find out how much truth there is to the law that's backing up this Texas depository. It's a real law. I mean, the law is there, and I don't doubt that the story I've told you is basically correct, but well, how does it work out? You had some other stories. We're coming down. We've got 3 minutes before we take the break, but you said you had your own list of some incredible stories for this week, so why don't we start, you know, take one now before the break and take another one, two, however many you've got after the break.
All right. Well, let's take the one that I think is on a lot of people's lips this week is the Greek crisis, which yeah. We've talked about many times before, but once again is coming to a very, very interesting head this week. There is a Eurogroup meeting that's going to be taking place in a few hours as we talk, Thursday, I believe, morning, European time. And it is going to be a meeting that at which the Greek finance minister will be present, and there will be negotiations or discussions about the next Greek payment to the IMF that's due at the end of the month, and there are other debt payments. And all signs are that the Eurogroup is saying the ball is in Greek's court, and Greece is saying we're not going to do anything with the deal as it exists. We're not going to pay this. And the interesting update to this that I just saw is that a parliamentary committee that was formed back in April, that was convened by the speaker of the Greek parliament, has just come out to say that the debt that has been imposed on Greece and its residents by its creditors directly infringes on the human rights of Greeks and is, quote, illegal, illegitimate, and odious. So we have an official Greek parliamentary ruling calling this an odious debt, which is what we had talked about as some sort of distant political possibility earlier. They're now apparently officially doing that, and there's a fairly substantial report that they've just issued with chapters on how the debt system mechanism that's been imposed on them was created to actually further them get the country into debt, and that the loan conditions that have been imposed are part of a political agenda of premeditated and organized attack on the country and a violent, illegal, and immoral mission to shift private debt onto the public sector. Some pretty bold words from a parliamentary committee. So it seems like Greece is really digging in its heels this time. And that's why everyone is talking about the possibility of a Lehman weekend. But I think a Cyprus weekend might be more of the point here. And
we'll talk
I think
more
the
about
Greek people.
Let's talk more about what kind of weekend we're going to may be coming up. When we return from some commercials, James, I'm here with Jim Corbett from the Corbett Report. And we will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask, and this is Financial Survival. I'm talking to James Corbett from the Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. And James was explaining that, if I understand correctly, the European Parliament has declared that the debt the government of Greece owes to its creditors is an odious debt, which means it doesn't have to be paid, it shouldn't have to be paid. And given that Greece, from my perspective, I'm going to speculate on this, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, Greece is already incapable of paying the debt. Now Greece has received moral authority not to pay the debt. You can bet the debt is not going to be paid. That's now a debt issue. The creditors aren't going to get any money, I am assuming, and that means they're not going to lend any more to Greece either. Both of them are going to go their way right now. There's no point to lending more money to Greece because you're never going to... The idea was, we'll lend you more money, you'll go into austerity so you can pay us back what you already owe us. That's dead. That's done issue. There's no more money coming to Greece, and Greece is not going to have to pay its debt. And the big surprise here is that we assumed that the battle between Greece and its creditors would be resolved by one side or the other. And it appears that it's been resolved by a third party. Coming out of the bushes. Nobody expected this to happen. Am I roughly correct?
In all counts, yes. In fact, again, just reading from the summary of this interesting document that just came out from the Greek Parliamentary Committee, they're on every single debt, they're basically calling it illegal and illegitimate. The IMF debt is illegal because its concessions breached the IMF's own statutes, according to this report. The ECB debt is illegitimate because it overstepped its mandate by imposing the application of macroeconomic adjustment programs via its participation in the Troika. And debts to the ECB are legitimate and illegitimate and odious, since the principal raison d'etre of the securities market program was to serve the interests of the financial institutions, allowing the major European and Greek private banks to dispose of their Greek bonds. And debts to the EFSF are judged illegal on the grounds that they violate treaties on the functioning of the European Union, while bilateral loans are seen as illegal because they violate the procedure provided by the Greek Constitution, and illegitimate as well. So again, every single debt they are now repudiating, which is it's pretty amazing. If this proceeds, if this is not just some sort of bargaining tactic, if this is truly Greece's position at this point, then I will gladly, happily eat my words about Syriza and everything that they've done to this point. If they really are going to take this stand, it's an extremely gutsy move to take, and one with huge ramifications, not just for Greece in the Eurozone, but for the Eurozone entirely. Because think of if Greece really does dig in their heels here, and this is their position, think of the ramifications of this for all of the other negotiations with all of the other people who are in that state of bailout or
Spain,
near bailout
Portugal,
right now.
Ireland.
Exactly right. It's the domino. I mean, this is a real domino situation where I think we could really see some other countries saying, hey, look at what Greece did. We're going to say the same thing. So huge ramifications if this does transpire the way people are saying it does. And the Greek people are getting prepared for it. I think we mentioned last month when the data came out that there was a Greek bank outflow of 5 billion euros in the month of April alone. That is 5 billion euros of withdrawals from the Greek banking system in April, which was up from 1.91 billion euros in March. I haven't seen the June figures yet, or the month-to-date figures, if there are any, but that's an exceptional amount, and there are anecdotal stories of Greek people with 10,000 euros stuffed under their mattress, literally or figuratively, as the case may be, but people are withdrawing large amounts of money in the event of some sort of Cyprus event where, you know, the banks close and there's a recapitalization and the depositors have to bail in. So we're seeing some very worrying signs, but some very big moves seem to be coming in the next week or so.
It's really quite astonishing, in part because, yeah, assuming the story is correct, and I assume the story is correct, but it's surprising because this has snuck up on everyone. Did anyone hear about the possibility of a decision like this? Did anyone know?
I hadn't.
Did they maintain secrecy on this up until just the last 24 hours or whatever? I never caught wind of it.
Yeah. I'm assuming that the committee was known about since it was convened,
sure.
Certainly the idea that they were going to come out with this, I haven't seen that before.
See, this to me poses a threat to the whole debt structure of the world. They're essentially saying, look, these people are too far in debt. It's wrong. Just you can't squeeze blood out of a stone or whatever, and you got to just let them go. If this catches on, it threatens the whole idea of currencies based on debt. It threatens the global debt system. And one of the things that I was going to ask you about that I'd intended to ask, I don't think Greece by itself, up until at least the last 20 minutes or so, I haven't thought that Greece by itself posed that much of a threat. You know, I know that there can be ramifications and domino effect and all that, but Greece by itself, whether it pays its debt or doesn't pay, it's not, the world is not going to come to an end. But I was wondering, just on the off chance that the world did come to an end, could Greece be blamed? Would they be a patsy? Could they be a patsy in the same sense that Lee Harvey Oswald claimed to be a patsy?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying here?
Oh, yes. Yes,
I mean,
yes. And I think, you know.
Could the triggers, could something happen in the next 10 days, 2 weeks where people, it's because the Greeks, they're the ones that made this all happen. When actually it's a fiat monetary system and or, you know, irresponsible
and
government.
And the predatory lending and all of that. Yes, exactly. And the Goldman Sachs book cooking and all of that. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what we should expect from all of this. If this does play out the way it seems to be playing out right now, and if it does lead to the cataclysm of the Eurozone going up in flames, there is no doubt that any and all economic hardship that results from it will be laid at the doorstep of Greece and their decisions here. It will, of course, I mean, all of the powers of the international mainstream media will be brought to bear on blaming the Greek people for this crisis. And who will be seen as the victims in all of this and the saviors, potentially?
The government.
It will be the same, exactly, the same ECB, the same EFSF, the same Troika, the IMF. All of these people will be seen as the saviors, the victims, the people that, they were doing so well until Greece stepped up. So, of course, there's going to be propaganda galore to convince people that this idea of odious debt just cannot be countenanced. We cannot have this idea on the books because look at what will happen. And I have no doubt that if things play out, again, we don't know for sure, but if things do play out the way they're looking, there will be real, very cataclysmic economic ramifications for a lot of real people living in the Eurozone. And it's not all going to be happiness and sunshine.
No,
I don't think there is a happy sunshine conclusion to this at this point. But all of that
really,
pain is going to be blamed.
It really is
Greece.
An astonishing story. I mean, I didn't think you could actually top the Texas story, but I guess you have.
Well, actually, I think I have another one.
Well, let's hear it.
Potentially tops them both. This one is not pressing. It's not in the immediate future, but I think for long term, in terms of global geopolitics and economics, it is the game changer. We talked about last year the holy grail of gas deals between China and Russia that was signed last year to supply, I believe it was 18 billion cubic meters of natural gas a year between Gazprom and China through the Power of Siberia pipeline. And at that time, it was this $400 billion deal over the lifetime of the contract was going to be denominated in dollars. But it comes out that now, apparently, according to official sources, the deal has not been signed. I mean, the sales contract has not been signed. So Gazprom export CEO Elena Burmistrova just came out to say that since the deal is not signed, the currency of payment has not yet been determined. However, the Chinese side and the Russian side are discussing today and in intricate negotiations on the possibility of paying in yuan and rubles, which I think is a game changer, not in and of itself, again, like the Greek situation, it's not just what's happening in Greece. It's the ramifications of this action, because on the global markets of energy exports, this one pipeline, in fact, two pipelines, because there's another one that's in the works that will be similarly affected. But these two pipelines are not on the global scale that important. But as the sample of the example that can be set, and the precedent that's being set by this, I think it is extremely important, because as we've talked about before, the last 30 to 40 years of the American dollar, the underpinning of that dollar has been the petrodollar. It's been the oil versus denominated in dollars. That is exactly why the U.S. dollar is the world reserve currency and has been for 40 years. Mm-hmm. Take that out of the equation, the U.S. dollar cannot be the world reserve currency. There would be no reason for people to hold as much U.S. dollars as they do. Again, it's just another paper cut, but I think this is a particularly important one and really could be, I think the historians of the future might look back at this as the end of the American world reserve currency system.
Well, it looks like we are in line for, you're talking about an important or big weekend. I'm not sure how fast this can impact.
Oh, it will take years, but I think this is
you
the starting point.
When we say years, you're speaking about the Russian Chinese oil deal where they're going to trade in terms of Chinese yuan rather than dollars.
Yes.
All right, I get that. Yeah, that we can talk about it today. It won't start happening to a significant degree for some time, who knows, 6 months, a year before it even begins. And the impact, it's more psychological right now. But this other situation with odious debt as it applies to Greece, this is going to put the concept of odious debt on everybody's lips. For example, we have college graduates in this country that allegedly owe something like $1.2 trillion in college debt, which is roughly the same amount of money that's being held by China in U.S. bonds, debt instruments, whatever. People say, oh my gosh, China could sell all that at once and would collapse the dollar. What happens if the college graduates get hold of this concept of odious debt and they say, we're not going to pay? and $1 trillion disappears because those debts are canceled. Is that possible?
It certainly is. I think it is. I think there are, obviously there are certain special conditions for student loans, et cetera, but I think there's still, especially over the last decade or so, we've seen this explosion in student loan debt to the point where it has now surpassed credit card debt as the, I think, the number one source of debt other than mortgages in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely important thing. And of course, there is a very good case to be made that a lot of this the loans that are made to students are under duress and in a manipulated market anyway, where obviously the market has been so skewed by government participation over the past few decades, as I think we talked about on this broadcast before. It's absolutely a situation where people are being more and more cornered into a place of accepting exorbitant loan deals in order just to get this education that they're told is necessary. So I think there would definitely be a case to be made. And yes, I think the setting of the political example of an actual country taking this stand on the international stage would be one.
And it's not just
one heck
a
of a
country
president.
Taking the stand. It's the European Parliament that's taking the stand. It's not Greece saying this is an odious debt. They're going to grab onto it. They're going to grab onto it like a bulldog grabbing onto a bone or something like that. But another authority has come in and said, wait.
Oh, no. In case I wasn't clear, it was the Greek Parliament that issued that.
Oh, my mistake. I thought you were saying the European Parliament.
No, the Greek
Parliament. That was my mistake. All right. I thought you were talking about the European Parliament. Well, then, all right. Then this is...
If it was the European Parliament, that would be pretty amazing, I must admit.
Yeah. All right. See, that's why I... Oh, my gosh. It's the European Parliament.
Yes. Okay.
My God. That's astonishing. Well, we've only got about a minute left, James. Do you have any more rabbits to pull out of the hat?
Other than that, what else needs to be discussed?
No, I understand.
Well, yeah, it's huge. But, of course, we just saw the coming and going of another Bilderberg, on which the agenda of this year's conference included Russia, of course, was specifically a topic of conversation. But I have not seen any reports of any leaks of information coming out about what specifically was discussed. One could well imagine what they might have been discussing there, though. I still think it's interesting that this conference took place after G7. But ultimately, it amounts to the same thing because, of course, all the participants will go home and start to enact whatever they discussed in their own way, as even the former Secretary General of NATO admitted in a radio interview a few years ago, that they set an agenda at Bilderberg and then they go back to their own home countries and start to implement that agenda, exactly as the conspiracy theorists have said for years and years and years. So I'm sure we'll see whatever was discussed there in the coming months, but it'll be interesting to see if any further info gets leaked out there.
Well, we'll look forward to discussing the Bilderbergers if we have more clear information next Thursday. In the meantime, have a good week, James. I always enjoy talking to you on the program. Folks, we are done, and we'll be back. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer, and James Corbett. Good night.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.